Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going really well, Chris. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, but I don't think anybody's going to care about that this week.
No, I don't think so.
We have a very special guest. We are here with Rosemary Orchard. She's known for a lot of things. She has a great website all about automation and a new podcast on Relay FM called Automators. How's it going, Rosemary?
It's going really well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we are super excited to have you. So we just kind of wanted to have a little discussion about how you use your iPad and automation. We know you are a developer too, so there's a lot of cool things going on. So we figured we just had a few questions for you and might be just kind of a fun discussion to have.
Yeah, I mean, I love the iPad. It's, I think, probably my favorite device. So it's, yeah, it's one of those things. I'm rarely without an iPad, to be honest.
That's awesome. Yeah, I it's awesome just to see how the iPad has come over the last, what is it? It's almost 10 years old now, right? And how it's kind of grown into this device where a lot of people are using it for a lot of really cool stuff. So let's start off. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you kind of do for your day job and things like that?
Yeah, so I work as a developer, primarily web-based applications, though nothing is ruled out. My job title is just developer, so I may end up working on iOS and Mac apps in the future. And I work at a university, and we bridge any external solutions that we've bought into our own internal things, so such as our own login setups and so on. And also, I just write applications for whatever we need. So the most recent one was, hey, we've got data in this tool and data in that tool. Can we bring it all together and add some more information so we can stick it on the website and update it automatically? It was like, all right, yeah, let's do that.
That's pretty cool. So throughout your day, since you're a developer, do you use your iPad for any of that kind of development work or anything like that?
Generally, no, because at work I have a MacBook Adorable and a 34-inch ultra-wide screen a monitor, which I use for my actual development. But what I do have is I have my 10.5-inch iPad Pro sitting underneath my monitor, and it's just showing me my OmniFocus so that I know what I'm doing, what my priorities are. I can see notifications as they come in so I don't forget that I have calendar appointments and things like that, because I am terrible at forgetting meetings. So my iPad is my it plays a supporting role throughout my day job, generally. Though I do take it to meetings and take notes on it with the pencil.
That's pretty cool. So OmniFocus, I have a hard time wrapping my head around it. Every time I download OmniFocus to kind of use it and give it a shot, I open it up and it just feels like there's too much there for me. Is there some particular feature or something that you use in OmniFocus that you really like?
Yes, the perspectives are basically the only way that I survive. I have a stupid number of tasks in OmniFocus just because I have so many different areas of my life. And I used to have all of my work things in Todoist, and then I realized that I was thinking of things that were personal things. And because I've trained myself over the years to dump it in my inbox and process it later, I then had personal tasks in Todoist, which I was having to take out and put into OmniFocus, or work tasks in OmniFocus, which I was having to take out and put into Todoist. And I was like, okay. And then I was told, well, you can switch to just using your laptop, which was the MacBook. And I was like, all right, let's switch everything over to OmniFocus. But yeah, so I basically live by the custom perspectives, because I have a group of perspectives for work and I have group perspectives for home, and they are based on what the top level folders are or should be for tasks. And that makes it much easier for me to get my work done.
Yeah, I'm sure you have like a bunch of automation with your OmniFocus and how you handle all the incoming tasks and all the inboxes that you handle and things like that. Do you have any specific kind of automation tools that you use that coincide with OmniFocus that you use?
Obviously, I use Workflow quite a bit, which I'm now using shortcuts instead. So I've got a series of shortcuts set up which allow me to dump things, especially in some cases. I've got some ongoing work projects which will probably run until I retire, realistically. So I have a workflow, now a shortcut, which when I type something in that's a work task, it asks me if it should go into one of these three projects or if it should just be like dumped into the general let's figure this out later project, which is a secondary inbox for me, just because I like to go through my inbox at home and it's a bit annoying to see all my work projects there as well.
Right. Yeah. With all of the things that you do, whether it's your day job or the podcast that you do, or Automates into Orchard, or your personal blog, you mentioned custom perspectives and things like that. But besides the task management aspect of things, what kind of tools and apps do you use to kind of deal with the different hats that you wear?
Well, I've been playing with hyperscheduling, which is something David Sparks mentioned ages ago on Matt Power Users. And I realized after he talked about it and I was like, oh, this is a good idea. Actually, my dad has been doing this for literally donkey's years. And I was like, all right, I'm going to call the person who knows me really well and ask him how he does it and how it works for him. And so my dad's suggestion, which I've taken, is basically what I do is I have a specific calendar, which is just for specifying what I'm going to do at specific times, just because if somebody comes to me and wants to organize a meeting and I've blocked in that I'm going to spend an hour sorting out my email inbox, which is atrocious right now, then, you know, I don't want to stop them arranging that meeting with me. So I have that on a separate calendar, and I have one of those for work and one of those for home just for time blocking. And I've decided, which in hindsight may have been possibly one of the best ideas I've had, is I'm going to have one non-work focus every day. So one day would be my blog, one day would be the podcast, one day would be Automation Orchard, things like that, just so that if there's anything to get done, then I can get them done on that day. And I just try and fit in a couple of hours in the evening working on that. And I don't specify I'm going to do X task at X time, just because that never ever works out for me. I've been there, I've tried that, I've failed. I've come back to it, I've tried it, and I failed again so many times. Rinse and repeat.
Yeah. So it's basically just areas of responsibility that you kind of just focus in with the scheduling then.
Exactly. Yeah. And I have a look at it and I estimate and I say, well, if I would like to get these three tasks done, that's probably going to take, say, 4 hours. So this Thursday is not very good because I'll be recording a podcast. But actually, Friday is pretty good because I'm going to leave work early. And so I try and figure it out based on that if I want to get certain things done.
Yeah. Yeah, hyper-scheduling has been something that I've been thinking about doing for a while. I think I just need to pull the trigger on it and just try it out and see what happens, just because, like you and like Chris, we all have many hats that we wear, and trying to juggle those things can be a little bit difficult. And I think for me, the hyper-scheduling thing and just kind of planning out areas of responsibility in your calendar would be pretty powerful if you do it right and you're a little bit diligent with it as well, because it definitely takes some mental, I'm blanking on the word,
it's a mental adjustment perhaps.
Yes. Oh my goodness, thank you. So you basically just have to have the foresight and the wherewithal to kind of focus on what you plan on doing, as opposed to just going in and looking at what tasks you have to do and kind of going all over the place with it.
Mm-hmm. I haven't tried hyper-scheduling or anything. You did a really good job of explaining it to me, because I didn't really understand it. So that might actually be something kind of interesting to look into, because especially for people that have a day job and have kind of a steady schedule, but, you know, want to do other projects. Mm-hmm. You're kind of known around the internet as an automation expert, and I was just kind of curious how that kind of came to be. Like, how did you get the idea to start your website, and how did your podcast came to be, and all that kind of fun stuff?
A lot of people forget this or didn't ever know it. I actually used to be a teacher. I taught English as a foreign language, and I was moving from one school to the next every single week. And it started with I had workflows, because there were a certain series of steps that needed to be completed for every different school that I worked at and for every contract that I was working on, things like that. So it started out with just this very simple, okay, well, I need to be able to add these things to my OmniFocus, and these are whole projects usually. But I didn't want to have to use my Mac, because I was originally using there was a great script, I believe by Chris Suave, for AppleScript on the Mac, where you could take a project template and it would replace certain placeholders in it for you, and then you would get a nice new project, which was great if I had my Mac with me. And I had, I think it was a 2013 MacBook Pro, so not insanely heavy, but not the lightest of things. And as I was looking huge amounts of paperwork around, I didn't want to take my Mac with me. So it started with I was just messing with workflow, and I got that working. And then I decided that I wanted to go back to university and learn to become a computer programmer. And I've really decided at this point, the first thing that I should do is learn workflow, because workflow is like programming with Lego. And so it's the foundation of programming. And I just started helping people out. I was lurking in the Reddit for workflow, just, you know, getting things done. People would say, oh, I wish there was a way to do this on iOS. And I'd be like, oh, here you go. Here's a workflow for it. It's, you know, everywhere. And yeah, it just sort of happened by accident in some ways.
That's pretty cool. So we have Siri Shortcuts coming out, which is the replacement to workflow now. Mm-hmm. Is there a particular feature that's new in Siri Shortcuts that wasn't in workflow before that you're kind of really excited for?
Yes, executing JavaScript on web pages. Now, for people who don't like this, I will give you a one-word translation: bookmarklets.
Oh.
So bookmarklets are the thing that you click on and then it does something in your browser for you. Being able to add that to a shortcut so you can say, hey, open this particular web page, do this code on that web page, and then do this. That, oh my gosh, I'm getting super excited about that, I have to say.
And you have access to it, right? You've been playing around with
it. Yes. Yeah, I somehow ended up on the beta. I actually, I subscribed to, I've got a developer account, obviously, a personal one. And so I signed up for it. And like an hour later, I got a message through going, hey, Apple would like you to join the Shortcuts test flight. It's like, click, click, click. Yes, 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 yes. Please don't let there be a no button anywhere on the screen. So I'm actually playing with it. And it's so much fun. I have to say, it looks really nice. They've changed. They haven't changed a huge amount, but they've changed enough just to make it a little bit more user-friendly, which is really nice.
That's awesome. I still don't have access to the beta. I requested it when it came out, and for whatever reason, I haven't gotten the email. So anytime somebody posts something on Twitter or a new blog post or something, I'm like studying the screenshots to see if there's anything different. I'm really disappointed I haven't got in, because I'm just so excited about it. I like the idea of the workflows kind of being a little more integrated, so you can kind of launch them from Spotlight, or you could just, yes, you know, tell Siri or something to run something. I've seen so many cool things. I think there's just so many possibilities there with those features, that with it being baked into the system, that it's just I'm over the moon about it. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got it on the first day, and literally a couple of days later, I flew to London. There was a MyPower users meetup, and I was just sitting there on the Friday night. I was actually waiting for my parents to arrive. I was at the airport, and I was like, oh, wait, I'm flying on Monday. I wonder if they've added anything so I can, like, you know, turn airplane mode on as part of a shortcut. And they have. And so I created one particular shortcut that's just all new actions. And so it does things like it turns cellular data off, so I don't have to pay for roaming. And it turns on airplane mode, sets low power mode, sets do not disturb. So that we've got all these basic, you know, operating system level controls in there as well now. And that just, it really amps up the possibilities.
I've written out a lot of like shortcuts and stuff that I want to build and test when I do finally get my hands on shortcuts. And one of them is kind of like a good night scene that will, you know, put my phone on silent. It'll, you know, turn off all the lights in the house. It'll lock the door, things like that. And I'm just so excited to get my hands on it.
Yeah.
So you work both on a Mac and an iPad. Do you have a automation tool you prefer over the other? Like, do you prefer workflow shortcuts over Automator, or are they just kind of one and the same for you, and they balance out like the different kind of work you need to do?
Well, I mean, I discovered many years ago, I mean, Automator on the Mac is a lovely place to get started, but it's so limited. And actually, workflow on iOS is a lot more powerful, just because, for example, adding a calendar event in Automator, you can only type in a specific time and date. It can't be relative to what you're doing, and you would have to write code to get it to calculate the specific dates and things like that. So I much prefer using shortcuts in that perspective, just because I've always got an iPad, I've always got an iPhone with me, unless, you know, something very strange is happening, in which case I might only have an iPhone. So that means that I can launch whatever automation it is on that. On the Mac, I do like Keyboard Maestro. That's extremely powerful, and I've translated quite a few of my workflows into Keyboard Maestro macros and vice versa. Obviously, you can't quite do everything the same, but just because the operating systems are very different.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I tend to prefer automation on iOS for some reason. It's just, I think it's because I always have a device with me.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I think workflow is one of those things that it's A, more accessible to people, but it's also more accessible in a way that everyone always has their phone on them. For most of the time, I always have my iPad with me. But, you know, if I go to a movie or, you know, something and I get an idea for a video or something like that, I can run a workflow that will create checklists and things and stuff like that. That'll put all the parts in there and then give, you know, put the video idea in the project and the correct project and things like that. Shortcuts app is missing a handful of features. The biggest one for me is native Dropbox integration. I don't know about you if that kind of affects you a lot.
Yeah, that's broken quite a few of my workflows, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I'm kind of like, okay, I'm kind of glad I don't have Shortcuts right now. Maybe Dropbox and Apple, they'll add it back later when iOS 12 gets launched or something like that, because that's going to break about 10 or 12 workflows for Shortcuts for me. The naming schemes are going to be very confusing for a little while. But have you found a workaround or anything for that right now, or is it just broken?
Well, for some things, I was saving them to Dropbox as an intermediary step so that I could easily upload things to my server. So for those, I am now connecting to my server via SSH and uploading things directly.
Smart.
Which I should probably have done a while ago. I used to actually use Transmit for this, which was a fabulous app made by Panic for, they still have it on the Mac and it's fabulous. I love it. But unfortunately the iOS app just did not sell well enough for them. Obviously, its support for Transmit was baked in actually into Workflow. They've naturally removed it now that Transmit does not exist anymore on the App Store, which is a shame because you could actually do the same things with Coda, which is their code writing / sort of FTP application. But yeah, the other thing I'm looking at doing is using Pythonista, which is sort of like using a jackhammer to, make a tiny hole in the concrete. It's way overpowered for what I would need here. But at the same time, it can do an awful lot of things. Guy who creates it is very open to adding things, and he has Dropbox support and so on in there, so you can write your own script to do that. So I'm currently in the middle of trying to decide exactly how I want to structure this. Do I want like 15 Pythonista scripts that will do very similar but slightly different things, or do I want one script with options and stuff like that where I then pass it parameters and it uploads things to specific folders based on that? But I think I'm probably going to end up using Pythonista for some of this. And for other things, I mean, if we get to keep the Workflow app, then I might just leave those particular ones in Workflow until I've got a better solution. Most of the reason why I need Dropbox support is actually because of shared folders. So if maybe Apple can just add shared folders to iCloud, that would maybe fix a lot of my problems and problems for other people as well.
Yeah, I'm really hoping the native Dropbox support comes back. I don't know if it will, because I wonder if Apple thinks, well, we have the Files app and, you know, Dropbox is in there and they think that's a solution. And
I mean, the thing is, I think that does make sense. The problem is, if you want to automatically save a file to a specific location, you can only save it to somewhere within the Shortcuts folder because of the way the containers work. However, I'm wondering if at some point, and I don't know if maybe this is already happening behind the scenes, or maybe if they're looking at this for iOS 13, which I'm hoping is a lucky one. Please don't let it be unlucky. They let app developers really make blocks for Shortcuts. So what happens right now is people can donate. I really feel that's the wrong word, but you can donate.
That's the worst
things.
Phrase, yeah.
I think it should have been denote and somebody got confused somewhere. But anyway, you can donate things. I've actually looked at this, and the things that are donated, so for example, playing a specific song, you can't then edit those Shortcut actions. They're just like a little fixed block that, you know, that you can just toggle whether or not to show that. But I'm wondering if they're going to let developers really add editable blocks at some point in the future. So instead of just like upload latest photo to this particular folder in Dropbox, you could have upload X to this particular folder in Dropbox. And then you could choose whatever you want X to be with magic variables or fixed variables or just the input from the previous action, things like that. And I'm very much hoping at some point we'll get that. So that would mean that companies like Dropbox can actually just write a couple of actions and then everybody's going to be like, woo, really happy, paranoid, go crazy. And everybody else is like, what is this thing again? But yeah.
some people might be wondering of like, why don't you just change Dropbox into iCloud? Because that was my first inclination until I started reading more about like what's going on with it. But like, for someone that might be listening, they're just like, oh, well, if you can't use Dropbox, you can use iCloud, right? Like, that solves all your problems, right?
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, you're limited then to specifically saving directly to specific folders in the shortcuts folder. So mm-hmm. then if I need to edit something with something else or add something from another application, I'm possibly stuck. So I like to use editorial just for previewing blog posts, which I write in Markdown, and I preview the images, which are local, and editorial connects to Dropbox. Mm-hmm. Full stop. And if editorial could connect to iCloud, it could only connect to its iCloud, the editorial folder. Same as Ulysses can only connect to the Ulysses folder, things like that. So then you end up with this very strange structure for where you're storing your files. And you're still back at the point where actually there's still no way that I can synchronize, say, for example, the automators folder with David Sparks. I can't share a folder in iCloud. So if I'm doing something with another person, I'm then stuck and I have to go back to using something like Pages, which is not necessarily what we want.
Right.
So for some things, obviously, it works great. And by all means, switch back to iCloud, especially if you're paying for iCloud storage, like the 2 terabyte family plan, I think you're going to be able to save a lot of Markdown files in there.
Oh, yeah.
But if you maybe have free Dropbox storage because you're a student or something like that, then obviously those people are going to want to use the storage that they have for free first, that does whatever it is that they need to do.
We could go into the weeds a lot about, you know, the specific tools and automation, things like that. But there are some people that are just now learning about like Siri shortcuts, and they're not too privy on how automation can work with iOS and how they can make things more powerful with their iPad and iPhone. For those kind of people, like, where do you recommend that they kind of get started when it comes to learning about automation, things that you can do, and kind of build from there? Do you have any specific places or things that they should try when they want to get into this big world of automation that they can get started with?
Well, to start with, if they're on iOS 12, or they will be getting iOS 12 in September, that's definite, then they're in the settings, Siri and search, then it suggests things for you. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely recommend that people get started there, because this is just one action and it tells you exactly what it's going to do. So, for example, I have the latest AirMail beta, which of course will be available in September. It's suggesting that I open all inboxes. So I use the global inbox in AirMail, and that's coming up. Or setting an alarm for 3 o'clock because I had to do something at 3 o'clock today, things like that. So these are things that I've done recently that Siri is thinking that I might want to do regularly, or that I am doing regularly. So it's suggesting send a message to my mom, because that's something I do a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's a really nice place to get started, because it's very simple. It's just one action, but then you can specify what you want to tell Siri to do, and you tell it what you want the magic incantation to be, and then it will do that for you. Once you've got past that and you've decided that yes, this is actually a pretty cool thing, it's a rabbit hole that's worth going down, I do warn you, it will take a lot of time, I would suggest that people start looking at shortcuts or at workflow. There's a lot of resources on both. And just see what you can find, just because it's very easy to import something somebody else has made, and you don't necessarily need to actually sit down and make this stuff yourself. So with automators, the first two episodes were about calendar and email. Mm-hmm. And obviously those are two things that pretty much everybody has to deal with. So if you want to automate something with regards to those two, then the first two episodes of Automators are a good place to start, and there'll be plenty more episodes of those. And also on Automation Orchard, my other website, I've got a lot of things about workflow, but there are a lot of really great guides out there. iMore has got a lot of good articles. The Suite Setup does as well. And it's just a case of finding something that strikes a chord. Look for something that answers a question or something that's been annoying you, and then go from there and try and figure out how to even just make two steps of it automated, and then add a third step, and then a fourth step. And then before you know it, you have a massively complicated workflow that does 501 things for you with the press of a button.
Yeah. And that kind of brings into another point that I kind of wanted to ask you about, of like, where do you draw the line? Like, because I've from personal experience, I've found myself spending way too much time trying to set up certain workflows to do specific things for tasks that I do only once in a while. And I found that I've spent more time trying to automate this thing than if I were to just do it without automation in general. I mean, when it comes to those kind of things, like, how do you kind of determine what's worthy of automation and what necessarily isn't?
That's a very good question. And this is something I was looking at recently. Jason Snell from Six Colors asked me, or actually he mentioned it on Upgrade and I started bugging him about it. And I helped him with Celsigon and a couple of other people figure out an automation. He had a report that every quarter for Apple's quarterly results that he creates with images. And he does this as part of the blog post for his website. And the thing is what was happening is it was taking him a really long time to create all of those images. They're lovely images, and he needs them to support the blog post so that he can actually discuss the things. But that was taking a while. And I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, if there's something that you need to do that's at least, say, once a quarter, and it's taking time when you need to be doing something else, or when you are actively trying to do like more than one thing at the same time, that's a good place to automate. Something that's not a good thing is if you are probably only ever going to do this maybe once a year, and it's possibly only a half hour task that you would take you like an hour and a half to automate. Well, that's going to take it 3 years for that to pay off for you. If you can automate that away completely, that's great, because then you spent an hour and a half and you never need to do it again. But when in year two you need to change something, that might take another hour and a half. But what I try and do to minimize the amount of time it takes to automate things is I try and choose the right tool to start with. So, for example, creating all of the blog posts for Automation Orchard is done with Python. And I originally did this on my iPad with Pythonista, and that script has now been handed off to my server, which runs it automatically. But I started by writing it in Python because I knew that way I could hand it off to my server and have it done automatically in the background for me, so that I just need to actually grab the JSON with shortcuts now and send some data back to my server when I say, yes, this blog post is a good one, no, this one's not relevant, things like that. But it's a case of try and decide, you know, if how much time do you think this is going to take you, then double it. And depending on how familiar you are with automation, maybe double it again and again, just to see. At the same time, like, Google first, because there's no need to reinvent the wheel. It's entirely possible that somebody else has had a similar problem that they've resolved. And if you can take what they've done as a basis, and if it automates 50% of what you've got, that's great. You know, that's a good starting point. And then you can just leave it. And then when it gets to the point that this task does really annoy you, then by all means, go back and add more. But I try and think, if it's only going to happen, you know, like once in a while, that's possibly not worth automating. And at the same time, if it's maybe quite a repetitive task, that's a nice one to save for Friday afternoon when you're not really with it mentally at work. And then you can just sit there and, yes, I'm just going to go through and I'm going to update all the page numbers manually in this particular document because they have to be done manually for some reason. Things like that. So, yeah, it just have a think about whether or not it's worth it. It's very hard to judge. Everybody's going to have to make that decision themselves. And everybody at the same time will also make that mistake and invest too much time trying to automate something and it won't pay off. But if you learn something, then that's always a positive.
Yeah. Yeah. I you know, with those workflows that I've done myself that I realize have taken like way too much time to do compared to how much time I'll be saving, I still when I start something, I always want to kind of try and finish it, especially with when it comes to like these workflows and getting them to work correctly, because the feeling of getting a workflow to work just the way that you want, that's built from scratch, is very satisfying. You kind of get addicted to it a little bit. And so I try and finish that. But yeah, like, I've learned a tremendous amount about workflow, specifically when I try and build these kind of these long lists of actions together, that I'm able to kind of take that knowledge and go elsewhere with it too. So I guess in a way the time I've spent on that hasn't been for naught, but the tasks in which that I was trying to build them for has kind of taken over with automation, as far as like how long it takes to do it as opposed to how long it takes to do it without automation. But yeah, I think that's something that is something to consider, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the other question is, what is the purpose of this automation? So I had something a couple of months ago where I had to create 60 of almost exactly the same thing. It was in a particular Java application that you can't program. And I looked at just hacking the stuff that I needed into the database directly and decided that the database structure was crazy enough that wasn't going to happen. And so I programmed Keyboard Maestro to just create this. And it took me about 20 minutes to do the Keyboard Maestro macro. But then I literally just set it running and sat there and drank orange juice and watched it do it. Now, it theoretically took a little bit longer to create each of these individual tasks than it with automation than it would have for me to do it manually. But every one of these that I automated was identical. And then I went back and changed the one thing that maybe needed to be changed or whatever it was for each of them. And it was accurate. So the question is, are you automating to save time or are you automating for accuracy? Because there's nothing wrong with something that's taking longer but being done automatically if it's more accurate, if accuracy is the goal. And so that's something else to keep in mind, because especially if, for example, it's, a document that needs to be created for the head of your company and you're a lowly person that's not what I meant. If you're new to the company and you you really want to make a good impression, this has to be really accurate. It's worth spending a little bit of time to automate it just so that it is really accurate, because that makes you feel better about what you're producing as well.
Yeah. And the JavaScript that you were given, that we had to create 60 items, that also could be like extremely tedious. So if you can try and find a way just to automate it, even if it takes a little bit longer, it will probably save you a few hairs that you wouldn't have to rip out otherwise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was driving me crazy as well, because the window of this Java application would not resize. For whatever reason, was at a fixed size, and it was just big enough that I couldn't actually see the spreadsheet that I was trying to copy things from. And I was like, right, this is when I'm stopping with the copying and pasting, and I'm getting Keyboard Maestro, and I'm using Click Add Image, and here we go. And it worked, and it did what I needed, so...
The other thing, too, is if you feel like you're spending too much time on automation, but you're still learning something, that knowledge will probably transfer over to something in the future, you know, whether it's a different workflow or something with JavaScript or something like that. If you're having to learn, if you're having to Google search around trying to figure something out, it's, you know, not the end of the world. You're learning, and that will probably transfer over.
Yeah, definitely. And it's amazing what you can do. I mean, I actually have my job now because I like to automate things. It started with, hey, why are we manually writing all of this stuff into a folder? I could write a little program and automation that does that. I mocked it up in workflow, demoed it to my boss, and he said, right, go learn how to program and program this for us, please, because this is a good idea. So, you know, I'm not suggesting everybody wants to change careers like I did, but it can really take you places or just help you get things done more efficiently and make your life as well as the lives of other people easier.
So, Rose, on a slab of glass here, we like to do these hypothetical questions where some Apple executive comes to us and says, hey, you get to pick a feature. So Craig Federighi comes to you and says, hey, Rose, we need one big feature in the next version of Shortcuts. What would it be?
Mac support.
Oh, hey.
Well, I mean,
I was not expecting that one.
Well, the thing is we have Automator on the Mac, but it's just nowhere near as powerful as Shortcuts on iOS. It's nowhere near as flexible. Yeah. I mean, what's great about it is people can program integrations for it. So, I mean, if I'm allowed like a feature and a half, then integrating the current ability to program actions for Automator into Shortcuts and upgrading Automator to Shortcuts, because, I mean, Automator is great and you can do a lot of things with it. It goes right down to the operating system level. The actual things that it does, it's amazing. But I think what would be great is if you could have these and have them sync, not just between your iOS devices, but with your Mac as well. That would really get people going, because some people do only have an iPhone and a Mac, and they would really like to sit down and, you know, like make the workflow nicely with their 15-inch or 27-inch, Retina screen, and then have it sync over so they can just run it. Or, you know, maybe they started making something and they want to keep running it, whatever. There's just a lot of possibilities there. And so I'm very much hoping that happens at some point.
Our pre-WWDC show, we made some WWDC predictions, and my thought was we would see what workflow become, but we would also, workflow would have some sort of ability to run Swift code in it. And That would be really cool to have. I don't think we'll get it because it's probably it'd probably be used for nefarious things, and Apple probably wouldn't like that. But it would be kind of cool to see if you could run Swift inside workflow.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, they've already started letting us run JavaScript on web pages. And there's this really cool app that I'm beta testing called Scriptable, where it's you just write a script and you can run it. And it's only in beta right now, but it's pretty cool. I will make sure that you guys get a link to that, because the guy was asking actually on Twitter if anybody else wants to beta test it. And I would absolutely love
to beta test that.
Yeah, I've been having some good fun playing with it. He's got some really cool demos in there. So they're letting people, you know, like we've already got Pythonista on iOS. I can write a lot of code with Python that can do an awful lot of things. I mean, maybe it's the hacker in me, but I can always think of security holes into everything. You know, I'm not really a hacker. I always find things and exploit them to make best use of them for what we need.
That's a hacker.
Yeah, I work in security,
so I work in information security. So I spend all day just hacking around on stuff, trying to see if I can break into it and see what I can make it do. So yeah. I totally get it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of those things, like, you know, there's nothing is completely secure. The Apple do a great job of making sure the devices are very secure. But I don't think there's anything wrong with letting us execute scripts. I mean, Automator on the Mac lets you execute Apple script and JavaScript for automation. You can do an awful lot with those. So I don't know if they're going to let us have Swift as well. Swift would be pretty cool, because that's then a language that if somebody learns that, they can then take it and learn to maybe write a whole app with it, or just make a pull request on an open source application, something like that. But at the same time, JavaScript's not a terrible language to learn either, because it's supported on the Mac and on iOS, and it's in Drafts, it's in the OmniGroup applications, it's in everything, basically. Maybe we'll get both. I would like to see that.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. I would love the ability to run a script or something. I have a few ideas that I think that would be kind of cool to do. Kind of getting back to the iPad. So we talked about Pythonista, we talked about Editorial and OmniFocus. Are there any other apps or anything that you feel that are you must have, like you couldn't work on the iPad without them?
MindNote, probably, because I just love sitting down and figuring ideas out and just sort of vaguely arranging them. And then I often, it depends on where whatever it is that I've just thought up is going. I often send things to Omni Outliner if I need more order to things, and then take it from Omni Outliner perhaps to OmniFocus if it's a project, or into a document if it's, say, for an article that I'm writing, things like that. So I really like MindNote and, of course, Omni Outliner. And the other one, Notability, just because you can record the audio of the meeting and take notes at the same time, and you can use the Apple Pencil or the keyboard. And then when you press play on the audio, it highlights the text or grays everything out, and then it recolors it as it is spoken. If you tap on a specific area of the text, then you can hear what the people were talking about when you wrote that, which is very, very useful if I've just drawn like three very large question marks in it because I got a bit lost with, especially I work in Austria and the native language spoken here is German. And so most of the meetings are, of course, in German. So every so often I'm missing a couple of the important keywords and I need to go and look them up afterwards. The other one that I use a lot, of course, is Drafts, just because you can automate so much with that, but it can be very, very simple when you need it to. It's truly a Swiss Army knife that's one of my favorite tools.
Drafts has been one of my favorite apps, just to, like, when I have time to sit around and mess around with, is just building actions and drafts and looking at the drafts, their directory of actions and stuff that are already pre-made by users and stuff. Those are really fun to kind of go through too and see if you can manipulate them and change them to make them work the way you want them to work for yourself.
Yes, yeah, it's great. And they've got a great forum there as well where you can go in and people ask questions about, you know, like, well, I've got this far, but I'm not quite sure where to go, or I have absolutely no idea where to get started with this because I don't know how to write a single line of code. Can somebody help me here, please? And it's really nice. It's a nice place to hang out, actually.
Is there any particular iPad accessories or anything that, like, keyboards, backpacks, anything that you just, you found that you absolutely love, especially backpacks. I'm having this existential crisis of trying to find the right backpack for me right now. It's being a nerd in a backpack. It's just too much.
Yes. Well, I have a very good solution to the backpack problem. Stop liking backpacks. My problem with backpacks is the problem I have with backpacks is it's summer. It's hot over here. We don't really have air conditioning in a lot of places in Austria. I don't have it where I live. I don't have it where I work. And about every 10th tram that I got on actually has air conditioning turned on, if it has air conditioning. And so I've stopped using backpacks just because I end up horribly hot and sweaty, and it's disgusting. But I do have a good backpack, which I will link you to. I just found it on Amazon. It was about $20, where it's got a USB port on it. So I can put a battery pack inside plugged into it and then actually plug whatever device that is needs charging into the outside of the backpack, which is really nice. And I got it, got very lucky with it because I really like the pocket setup. It's simple enough while offering me the options I need. But the bag that I use day to day now is I've just got a Kipling crossbody handbag. So sorry guys, you probably won't like this one, though it is a nice neutral navy blue. But it's big enough for a 10.5 inch iPad Pro, which was my primary requirement when purchasing.
Gotcha.
taking the iPad shopping. Does it fit in this handbag? No. Does it fit in this handbag? No. Does it fit in this handbag? Yes. Excellent.
The backpack that you got, does it have like a diagonal pocket on the front of it, black?
Slightly diagonal. I actually got it in blue. I think the bag comes in black and gray and some other things as well. I will make sure that I send you a link because
I think we might have the same one, but mine's fallen apart on me right now. I've had it for a little while. Yeah, I'm pretty rough on backpacks.
Well, I've only had it since March, and I don't really use it that much. I used it this weekend because I had to take my laptop with me. I've got a 15-inch MacBook Pro, and it's got the MacBook Pocket. But yeah, I don't tend to use backpacks that much, I have to say. Other accessories, smart keyboard, Apple Pencil on the 10.5 inch Pro, and I have the leather slipcase as well, which I like. It was horrifically expensive. It looks like you can now get knockoffs for about $15 on Amazon. So unless you specifically want the Apple fancy leather one, then maybe just buy the fake leather $15 one, because they look really nice. And on my 12.9 inch iPad Pro, I have the Logitech, I want to say it's the Create, the original keyboard that they made, the not kickstand one, just because I use my iPad on my lap most of the time, and kickstands and laps, especially with crossed legs, not very stable. And on a 12.9 inch screen, that would be dangerous.
No, yeah, you don't want that. I'm still bitter that Logitech never made a Create for the 10.5.
I know, right? That would have actually solved practically all of my iPad issues, but no.
You and me both. I've resorted to the smart keyboard for my iPad, and it does okay, but like especially when it comes to like wanting to use it on the couch or wanting to write some stuff while I'm watching television or out and about, I have to find a level surface to put it on because it just doesn't work well for my lap personally.
Okay, because I got the cellular iPad 10.5 because I realized I was going to be taking it everywhere. And if you're taking it everywhere, get cellular. You don't have to pay for cellular until you need it. But when you need it, having the ability to just grab it is good. And I use it balanced like on my handbag and on my lunch bag on the on my lap on the tram. And I've not had any issues with it. That said, I did buy AppleCare just in case. It's one of those things. For some people, it works great. Other people, it doesn't. I guess maybe my handbag elevates it to a height where it just and flattens everything out enough where it can just balance nicely for me.
Yeah, I'm a bigger fella, so my gut gets in the way, especially when it's on my lap, which is a problem. But that's besides the point, really. So I do want to kind of circle back on the forum that you guys created with automators. I know that Mac Power Users also has something like that after they left from Facebook. I think it's the same engine that you guys use on the same.
Yeah, using Discourse in both.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that I don't know how you find time to sleep, honestly, Rose. I the amount of things that you do and things like that is incredible. But when it comes to like managing the forum and contributing to that and seeing how things are working, how do you manage to make that work? Is it with a Mac or are you able to do things with the iPad or
especially with the Discourse app on iOS, I don't have an issue. The Facebook app on iOS was always a bit problematic because it never supported split screen, which was very disappointing. But yeah, I tend to just hop in on my iPhone or my iPad, or sometimes the Mac, tends not to be the Mac, whenever I have time, and just make sure that everything's okay. I have also set it up. Thankfully, Discourse has a lot of hooks, which means that it's ripe for automation. And even though the servers, because we are not hosting with Discourse for these, just because we're not at the volume where that would make sense. So we're hosting our own, which means that we don't get full push notification support. But I've hooked it up so that with some automation, thanks to If This Then That, I get a push bullet notification, which I can then evaluate if somebody reports something or something needs checking, because maybe somebody's brand new and they just posted 3 or 4 different things, which for us is not actually a spam problem. It's just people getting excited, and Discourse is built in moderation settings going, ooh, this person might be a spammer because they're brand new and they're very excited. But yeah, so that's good. And it's nice just because I can draft things and save them for later and then come back and finish them off. And that syncs, because it saves it on the server, it syncs between devices. Whereas with Facebook, drafting things for later and coming back to it was dangerous, very dangerous.
Yeah. I can definitely see that.
Thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you on the internet?
I'm at Rosemary Orchard on lots of things, microblog, Twitter, I believe Instagram. Don't quote me on that, though, because I can never remember my username. and I'm at rosemaryorchard.com. And I also have automationorchard.com, but that's all linked from my main website.
And you've also got the new podcast on Relay Automator.
Yes, which is, of course, linked directly from the homepage of my website.
we'll have links to everything in the show notes, too, for everything. With that, Chris, where can people find you?
I'm Chris_Lolly on Twitter, and you can find all my work at my website, theuntitledsite.com. And my last name is spelled L-A-W-L-E-Y. Jeff, where can people find you?
You can find me over at tablethabit.com or over on Twitter at I am Jeff Perry. With all that said, thank you again, Rose, for being on. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I wish you the best of luck with everything that you've got going on, whether it's Automation Orchard, Automators, the podcast, your personal blog, whatever endeavors that you take on in the future.
Thank you very much.
To everybody else, we will talk to you next time.